All right, Mail It In Friday. Overdrive is off and running. TSN 1050 on the TSN app. Your home smart speaker, and at some point up on TSN 2. It's Brian Hayes, Yo Doug, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan. A bit of a laid-back Friday.
Ignoring me today, possibly. Wow. Well, I sent you some GIFs.
Yeah,
some
you know what? You're turning into annoying GIF text sender guy, which is what the Grappler does and Taddy. Like, you just, there's no message. There's nothing you're actually seeking out in terms of a response.
My favorite GIF is the guy with the beard, which I think is Robert Redford.
Yeah,
with
just nodding
beard,
at you?
And he's just nodding.
It's so good.
I love that one.
Yeah, that is Robert Redford. And it's an outstanding beard, I must say. And it's a great GIF, and it works perfectly. But, yeah, I was ignoring you. I had other things going on today, and a lot of people were calling me and bothering me, and I just I wasn't in the mood because last night didn't really go my way on a number of different fronts.
Al's brother fleeced you is what happened.
That was the greasiest backdoor cover in the history of football.
I'll tell you what. I'm not like a gambler guy like you, Hayes, but the term backdoor cover is my new favorite thing in life, and I love it so much.
It's perfect, Al's brother, though, isn't it? Doesn't it perfectly describe it?
Yeah, it does. It really does. And Al's brother, he needs to figure out his life because he was so jacked up to help you out with the info that he gave you. And then he texts me last night and he's like, we're going to do it. I'm like, what?
So he jammed Hayes up on purpose.
I'm at work at TSN and then he texts, backdoor cover, baby. And I'm like, you little devil, you are backstabbing Hayes right now. It's almost like he fleeced you and gave you the wrong info. What?
No, it's on me because I didn't accept his info. I mean, he took the Bengals, and I understand that. Al's brother is going to go with whoever takes his pick. He is Don King. He is a front runner, right?
Yes.
Like, he will enter the ring with one person, and if the other guy wins, he'll walk out with the other one. So he's not committed to me. He's not committed to you. He is committed to his pick, and whoever gets subjected to it is who he's going down with the ship with, and that's what happened last night because he sent me a text as well. He's like, ooh, greasy backdoor cover. Like, thanks, Al's brother. I know that.
Yeah.
I'm on the wrong side of it. Like, that last drive was meaningless. Like, Joe Burrow threw 61 times last night, which is insane.
Yeah, it is.
Like, crazy. That is happening.
He
is going to be good.
He
was good last night, and he should be. He's first overall pick. Like, I love how people throw that out. No, I think they found one there. I hope so. They took him first overall.
You know
what I like about it, Hayes? Go ahead.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, you know who I don't like? The other quarterback. He was being a hero again last night.
Hey, he played well. We can't rain on Baker's parade, and then when he wins a game, you say, I don't like him.
Did you see near the end of the game, he's sitting on the bench with his laid back? Like, I'm like, you know
what? What's the problem with that? What's he supposed to do?
He's being a hero. And you watch,
I told you that yesterday. He's a hero, and you knew they were going to win this game, and they think that they're the best team in the NFL.
Well, and they
right
kept
now.
Saying on the broadcast, they're like, wow, the swagger's back for Baker, man. I was like, this guy, I get it, Hayes. I'm not here to rain on his parade, but
you are raining on his parade.
I don't like him.
That's
I don't
fine.
Like the way he conducts his business, and he's going to get his. You watch.
And you
I
know
like,
what's going to come further? If you keep supporting him, we don't like you.
Well,
that's where
that's
we're
not
at.
The case.
That's fine.
That's
I like that you guys can be consistent with that. You should be consistent. I'm not asking you to be the biggest fan of Baker Mayfield. I am not the biggest fan of the antics all the time. But when he gets roasted by Baltimore, then we all yell and scream, that was brutal, that was brutal, that was terrible. When he plays well and they win, you can't be like, well, I didn't like how he was sitting on the sideline.
No,
like, that's pushing
it
a bit in terms of, I think, just being unfair and hating on the guy for the sake of hating on the guy. But, listen, I thought he played well. He threw one bad pick. He didn't see double coverage. He threw it, and Burrow and the Bengals went the other way and put six on the board. But overall, it was a very entertaining game. Like, it was,
and
Cleveland was the better team. And I want to credit Fox and Thursday Night Football because there were some fans in the stadium. I don't know how many total, but there were some scattered. But I thought the sound effects were perfect last night.
What are you so horny about that
for? I saw like, that. You were like, perfect crowd.
Yeah, you're
noise.
Like, the sound effects, it makes it seem like it's such a real crowd. And I absolutely love it. I love it.
Why would you not want that? Why wouldn't you want it to sound like every other game?
I don't know what it does
It makes
for
me
you, man.
Feel normal. Do you know that there were 401 cases today and we're going backwards again and we're in the second wave? Like, how about some normalcy when you turn on the game? They're playing. It sounds right. It feels right. That's the way it should be. Like, why would you want an empty, cavernous, just nothing broadcast where Buck and Aikman, you can hear their stomachs growling? Like, why wouldn't you want some sort of background noise?
You can hear the background noise, but then when you watch a play and you look in the stands and there's four people, don't you kind of figure out that it's fabricated?
Of course it's fabricated.
Dude,
of course
you've been
is.
Talking about this crowd noise for 2 months. You love it. I'm happy you love it.
I love it,
man.
I love that we're 2 weeks in and Fox has figured it out. I hope NBC does and CBS and ESPN. I hope they call up Joe Buck and say, Buck, hook us up with the game plan there.
Joe Buck, Hall of Famer Joe Buck.
Yeah, shout out to the Hall of Famer Joe Buck. That's right. So we had that going on last night. And Peter King will join us in about 20 minutes. And we'll get Peter's take on Burrow and Baker and the rest of the games on Sunday and Monday night. The Jays gave up double digits again. They give up 10 runs. They lose 10-7.
Yeah,
they get swept.
Tough.
And now they got a double header. Like, imagine jumping on that bird. You gave up 43 runs in three games.
You wonder
43.
You wonder the mental state. Like, do you get on the bird and collectively, because guys, you know, might grab a beer and sit in the, everybody has little chats, and maybe the chat is, man, we're not even close. And it might creep into just, I hope not, a spiral. Because that's an ass-beating of...
Epic proportions. Yeah, that's salute gate over three games on the road. Like, that is as bad as it gets. You give up 43, that's just abysmal.
43 runs. Like, that's not a record, though, right? Like, is it even creeping in on a record, or has there been a team?
I believe our boy Gibby sent that tweet out last night. That is the second most runs given up in a three-game series in franchise history. They gave up 47 to Seattle back in 2000. So they were creeping up on that, but that is the second most runs the Blue Jays have ever allowed in a three-game series. And they were not a playoff team in 2000. They still will be this year because no one's chasing them, and that's fine. You know, this isn't some big shock. They are two or three arms away from maybe being two or three arms away in terms of the staff, in terms of the bullpen.
And other
they've
than
had
Ryu,
injury problems.
Who are they going to put? They got to find somebody to go out there and give them some kind of quality start. And I don't know who the hell that is, but that's quite a drop-off after the race.
Yeah, they've got Ryu and then a bunch of guys, you know, right now in that rotation. That's effectively what they have. And they know that, and Shapiro and Atkins know it, and the truth is, over the course of a 162-game season, this team is maybe a 500 club. You know, around there. Maybe a 500 club. Right. And this year, they don't have to worry about that as much because they're not playing that many games and expanded playoffs, and they're in a much better position. But it's not only that. Like, Vladdy Guerrero Jr., I looked up his underlying stats today. He has a zero war. Zero wins above replacement. Zero.
That's not good.
No, that means he is a replacement player. Like, to put that into perspective, DJ LeMahieu is like a 2.7 wins above replacement. He's had injury problems. Ryu is up around 2.3. It's
isn't
a sabermetric.
Isn't Trout the king daddy topper of it all?
Yeah, he's like the...
Trout's always, by the end of a full year, like up in the double digits, which is just unheard of. Like, you're pushing 8, 9, 10. You're a great, great player. But Vladdy is just not bringing anything at the plate. And you know he's not going to bring much defensively either. So that's a concern. And we'll see what they've got in store for the doubleheader. But you had that. Now we got a cup final. Dallas-Tampa.
I was concerned about our partner here on the panel once it went into overtime. I'm like, this could be a three-beller. Like, it, you know, the Islanders were just chipping away and just chipping away. And the goalie played really well, too, Varlamov. I was like, I don't know.
I told you guys yesterday, that's a 2-1. If they played five more times in the next 15 days, every game would be 2-1. It was just this.
Yeah,
there's just guys are fatigued, and there's just not much going out there. I don't know what, like, Hayes what kind of betting line would be on, like, goal scoring in the finals, but I don't see it being very high, man. I see it a 2-1 fest again.
Well, I worry that, honestly, Hayes, you could chime in, but I worry that the goalie, you know, Hudobin, like, he hits a wall. Like, he's played so well, and but you can't give up 40 shots, and they gave up a ton of shots every night to Vegas, and I know that he's well-rested now, but you start giving up 40 shots to Tampa, Tampa's got a lot higher skill than Vegas does up front, like that finishing high-end skill. Like, Vegas has high-end skill, don't get me wrong, but there's no point. There's no
Kucherov,
Hedman, like that. Those guys are elite. And this Hedman now, he might be is he the Conn Smythe favorite now?
Well, I was wondering about that. Like, I still think it would be Point and Hudobin. You know, I think so. Right. And I wouldn't be shocked if it goes seven, if Hudobin wins it, even if he loses. You know, even if Dallas loses, I wouldn't be shocked if he is at least considered or gets some voting. But I think Hedman has to be right there. For sure. I mean, more so than anyone else that I can think of on Dallas. Maybe Heiskanen. Like, he's had a great playoff as well. And he deserves a lot of love. And it's a big platform for him. And I think, you know, there's two ways to look at this for the NHL. These are not big markets that are going to draw a ton of attention. So from a marketing standpoint, this is not an ideal final. Because Dallas and Tampa are not Original Six. They're not in the Northeast. They're not in Pennsylvania. We know that. Right, like, they're just not going to draw what you might get if it's Chicago, Boston, or, you know, God forbid Toronto ever got there, or Montreal, or a Canadian team up here, in terms of the buzz that would be created with that. But, you know, in this whole haze of asterisk, no asterisk, if I told you 4 months ago, before we had ever heard of COVID, I guess 6 months ago now, Tampa plays Dallas in the Cup Final, you'd probably say, I could see that. Like, that makes sense. You know, like, those are two really good teams. And Dallas was, you know, pushing up the standings before everything shut down. They were a top four team in the West based on the standings. Tampa, you can make a strong argument, was the best team in the league or real close to it. So I think from that standpoint, they lucked out that it wasn't, you know, Arizona, Montreal. And you're like, wait a minute, what? Like, these two teams shouldn't even be here. Like, these two teams from the hop in October prove they deserve to be in a Cup Final. Like, maybe they should have been beaten by somebody along the way, but you can't say these are terrible teams that caught a flyer and what are they doing here. That whole discussion gets thrown out the window.
Yeah, you're right. Like, Dallas, I just think that the fanfare isn't there for Dallas. Tampa, obviously, we're on the East Coast. Tampa's had a history. They won 62 games previous year. Like, Tampa's been on the cusp for many years, where Dallas, you know, we forget that they took St. Louis to Game 7. We forget that they've been a very strong team but haven't been able to get over the hump. Now they got over the hump. And is it crazy? We never even brought this up. Is it crazy that in year three, Vegas, like, we're almost disappointed for Vegas? You're like, man, yeah, they should have been there. Like they've gone to a Cup Final and arguably, whether it got rinsed or not, the way you look at it last year, and then this year, they should have, I mean, not should have, but they could have been in the finals. And you're looking at it, that's 3 years in. This is a really well-built team. And Kelly McCrimmon's in his media is like, yeah, we're really happy. We thought this was a team that could win a cup. And, you know, we're going to continue to reload. And they're 3 years into the league.
I know, it is
wild. It's crazy.
It is wild when you consider the expectations.
Right.
It's just absurd that they are 3 years in. You're right, and they felt probably they had a better chance to win than 27 or 28 other teams.
And they're pissed off. They're like, nah, you know what? Like, we could have done this.
Yeah.
There's no silver linings or anything like that. No, and like, it's not a moral victory for them. Like, they're legitimately pissed off. They're not in the final, and this is an organization that 3 years ago was not even up and running.
Like, yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, and you hate to bring it back to Toronto, but I don't think you only have to bring it back to Toronto. This can be Canada-wide. There's not been a Canadian team to win a cup since 93. So to put that into perspective for you, just to make everyone rattled on a Friday when it's pretty nice outside and, you know, COVID's starting to lurk again, and we don't really need this type of mentality. But Vegas is in year three. No moral victories, no silver linings, rattled. They're not winning a cup.
Yeah.
Forget just competing for one. Not winning, and they feel great about their chances next year, which they should. And I think as it currently stands, Vegas should be favored over every Canadian team to win next year. And now you got Dallas and Tampa in the cup final. One of these two teams is going to add a second cup in the last 20 years.
Yeah.
Dallas won in 99, Tampa won in 04. So there's not been a Canadian team to win a cup since 93, and one of Tampa or Dallas is going to have two, and Vegas is pissed that they're not winning a cup, and they're in year three. Like, yeah. It's just absurd, and it really speaks to just a bad kind of cycle up here for a long, long time.
Ray said it best. One team's happy, and the other 30 are just BS mad. Like, that's just the way it goes. But you would think one Canadian team would sprinkle in something.
Yeah.
One of them.
Well, you've had have you had deep runs? What, Ottawa a couple years ago? Who else has done a deep run, like a nice run where maybe out of nowhere?
Calgary lost to Tampa.
Yeah, Calgary
lost.
I'm trying to. Edmonton, yeah, but that
06,
was 04. Edmonton
Ottawa
in 06.
In 07. Ottawa again in 16. They went to the conference final.
Right. It hasn't been a steady stream.
Vancouver in 2010. They were in the cup final.
Exactly. And I was.
Vancouver
I
was the last, like, great Canadian team. I think.
That was 10 years ago. And they were, you know, they looked quite nice in the playoffs. This one, but I mean, they're still chipping away. They're still in the same boat with, you know,
three or
four other Canadian teams. Yeah,
they're not Vegas.
Yet.
They're not Tampa or Dallas. Like,
right.
That puts it into perspective. It has been 10 years since you had a Canadian team where you're like, that team should win a cup or could, and everyone would be like, totally get it. That's a great team. Like, what a deep team. What a quality team. Top to bottom, just outstanding organization. It has been 10 years. Now, there have been some good teams sprinkled in, right? The Habs had some runs. The Habs have had their runs here or there. Calgary's been kind of hit or miss at times, but they've been okay. Ottawa's been, you know, hit or miss at times, but okay. Winnipeg went to, was it a conference final against Vegas, I guess, a couple of years ago? But really, when we're talking consistently for like 2 or 3 years, where you're like, that's one of the top 2 or 3 teams in the league, it has been a decade since one of them were a Canadian team, and that was Vancouver in 2010.
Well,
that's just gutting. You know, it's tough. It's tough to accept if you're a Canadian hockey fan, but that's the reality. And you're just waiting for someone to say, you know what, we'll take the mantle here.
Yeah.
We'll do it. And it should be, like, when you really start breaking down history, the Leafs have been way behind everyone else. You know, like, other teams have been in the Cup Finals or won Cups, Edmonton, Calgary.
Yeah, like a little, you know, that Montreal. deep run where you said, you know, Edmonton against Carolina, that was like a deep run, or you know, Montreal, like Toronto hasn't had that deep run in a while.
In over 15 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, they haven't won a playoff run since 04. Peter King coming up from NBC and his column, we'll get his take on the game last night, Baker versus Burrow, and what he makes of the Browns' win. Does it mean anything into the future? What happens with Brady and company this weekend?
Yeah, I want to see what he thinks of those comments. Does that tandem have the truths that Brett Favre mentioned?
Okay, so we'll catch up with that. And reluctantly, we're tracking Tiger, but it looks like he is trunk slamming.
Dude, that is a slashing fest out there.
Yeah,
like the wind's howling now, and it's just, I think John Rahm and Tony Finau posted a pic on Instagram, and they said, anybody happy they're done playing Wingfoot today?
Yeah,
like it's a chop fest. Chop fest.
Well, like Tiger legitimately, he might shoot 80 today. Like I'm just tracking on Twitter. He is doubling and chopping and
dude, Rory started out with a birdie to go 4 under or 3 under, and now he's plus 6 or 7.
Yeah.
Wow.
I saw right before we came on, Patrick Reed, who was leading last time we checked.
My boy.
Your boy, Patrick Reed. I'm gonna need a winner here because if Tiger misses the cut, I'm 80-80 on the weekend. But Reed thought he hit a great shot. Like, thought he hit a great shot on 18, and he hit the top of the hill, and this thing came back 80 yards. 80 yards. Like, you got to see it. The ball was, like, it was going at a speed as if someone had whacked it with a wedge backwards.
Wow.
Like he was, and then he looks at his book, and he's like, "What the hell was that?" Like,
I like the challenge, Hayes, and I know you like seeing these guys struggle, but that's when it gets goofy like that. Like, come on,
yeah.
That guy can hit a sand wedge or a nine iron, whatever the hell he hit. They're better than any person in the world, and it's going back 80 yards.
Yeah, it was goofy, but yeah, we'll track Tiger and we'll see what happens with him. Peter King coming up on week two in the NFL, his take on a game last night, and Rays coming up just after 5. We'll start teeing up the Cup Final, which begins tomorrow night. Will we see Steven Stamkos? It has not officially been ruled out. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, Peter King from NBC coming up here in just a moment, NFL insider. On the Browns with a win last night, the Bengals with a late cover. So, you took that one. Al's brother took one as well. And I think we'll go to the jury on the Braden Point audio because I feel like the jury is totally unnecessary. I mean, it just was never a bet. It was never even remotely close to locked in.
Jamie, did you not hear the man say, well, he's not going to play? And I said, well, he's going to play. Do you want to put a hunch on it? And he said, I like that.
Yeah, I thought you, to be honest, Hayes, I thought you did accept that bet.
Okay. Well, we'll play the audio in just a moment.
Play the audio. What audio?
Yeah,
the man just said you took the bet. Is that not enough for you?
That was my assumption. Now, I don't have the actual court. What is it? The court notes? Mm-hmm. Isn't there usually somebody that takes notes?
Yeah, there's someone there jotting away. Yeah.
Yeah. So there, I don't have the court notes, but my assumption is that you accepted that bet and you said, I don't think that Point is going to play. O said he's playing 100%. I'll put 100 down on it.
Yes. So well, that is precisely what happened. I did not think he was going to play. O was right. I'm not disputing that I was on Point not playing. What I'm saying is just because O yells put a hunch on it, I can't sit here and say I'll put a hunch on the sun coming up tomorrow and then you have to pay me 100 when the sun comes up.
That's because like you're 27 under.
No, we'll play the audio. It was never remotely close to locked in.
Whatever,
but if we go to the jury and Noodles...
Yeah,
Al's brother, Mullen, the grappler, you know, if everyone locks it in, then so be it.
I'll be a good listener. That's all good.
Okay, we'll present it to the court a little bit later this hour. You know him from NBC Sports and his column you can find online every Monday. Here is NFL insider Peter King. How you doing, Peter?
What's up, guys? How are you?
We're doing very well. We're trying to digest what the hell happened last night in the state of Ohio. That was a fairly entertaining game. I was impressed with Cleveland overall, but in terms of the quarterbacks, Baker or Burrow, more compelling outcome and storyline for you?
Well, I think that game was absolutely critical for Baker Mayfield. He had to play well. If he doesn't play well, all kinds of crap is going to come down on his head. This is year three. He's got to show that he is the long-term answer without any question. As the quarterback of the Cleveland Browns. And everything he showed last night was positive. Now, it helps when your running game gashes the opposition for over 200 yards, and it helps when you're playing the Cincinnati Bengals, who will be the worst team in that division. Now, they're not hopeless, and the reason that they're not hopeless is because of Joe Burrow. In his first two games, Joe Burrow has shown the world just what LeBron James tweeted last night mid-game. This kid Burrow is really good. He's got it, you know, whatever it is. But I think that everybody who has watched Burrow and anybody who watched the game last night would say, my God, Joe Burrow is an intriguing prospect and we really like what we see. And I will be surprised, not shocked, because, you know, this is the way life is. And a lot is, you know, of how you play as a player is based on who's on your team. And right now, the Cleveland Browns have a much better roster, 1-53, than the Cincinnati Bengals. But in my opinion, the quarterback in Cincinnati is better.
Yeah, I can't necessarily argue that. Although I think the effectiveness of Baker last night, the stats don't scream at you the way the Burrows do, but I thought he was relatively effective. He threw that one pick. He didn't see
no
double
question.
Coverage, right? And he relied on his run game, which he's allowed to do. But I don't think Burrow can survive, and I don't think it's a smart strategy to put a kid out there and ask him to throw 61 times. I mean, that just cannot continue. He's going to get killed at some point.
He's
that O-line is terrible.
He's not going to throw 61 times. But the problem that you have is that every time he looked up, he was down 10. So, you know, no coach worth his salt is going to say we can survive throwing it 60 times a game. You know, this isn't the Southwest Conference, and, you know, it's not Texas Tech and those schools. So I don't expect that to be a habit, but, you know, again, you got to coach according to what you have on your team at that time, and right now Burrow gives them the best chance to win.
Sticking with the quarterbacks, what did you think of the exchange with Bruce Arians and Tom Brady last week? The way I looked at it, he was just describing the two plays and what happened. I don't think he was being overly critical. And I know Brett Favre has come out and said maybe they have a truce where, you know, the coach can talk about the player just so everybody knows they're all on the same page. But what did you think of the exchange? And was he overly critical, or is he just describing the plays, as I thought?
I didn't really think he was overly critical. If you look up Bruce Arians over time and you look and see how he has talked about his quarterbacks over time, he has many times been critical of choices that his quarterbacks have made and throws that his quarterbacks have made. So I didn't think what Arians did was all that much different from what he has done in the past with Carson Palmer, Ben Roethlisberger, and some of the other quarterbacks he's had, Andrew Luck. So, I mean, we'd probably have to go back and do a forensic analysis of that, but my feeling is that Arians is probably one of the more honest coaches who, if you make a mistake in his eyes, he's not going to have any problem with announcing it to the world.
With NFL insider Peter King. So how do you expect Brady and company to regroup after somewhat of an ugly game last week, but a tough one at New Orleans? Now you're at home against Carolina. You're supposed to win this outright. What do we see on Sunday from Tampa?
Well, consider that, you know, approximately 1 month ago, Tom Brady got in a huddle for the first time ever with his teammates in Tampa. And for their first game, for the first test that he has, they have to play at the game that is likely or has a good chance to be the toughest game on their schedule. So, you know, again, you know, and maybe Kansas City will be, you could easily make that argument, but, you know, in general, I think the way you have to look at it is, you know, the NFL did not do the Bucs favors with giving them, you know, either the toughest or one of the two toughest games on their schedule right out of the box. That's one thing. But the second thing is, you know, I think Brady made one really bad decision in this game, and that was the pick six he threw. That was a bad decision and a bad throw. And it was a fairly easy play by Janoris Jenkins. And so what Brady has to do is he's just got to get to know his guys better, which he's in the process of doing every day. But I do think he's going to struggle for a chunk of this season. How long that's going to be, I don't know. But this week, at least it's a fair fight. He's playing a quarterback who also is just getting used to the guys on his team, hasn't had much experience with them yet in Teddy Bridgewater and the Panthers. I would expect the Bucs to win, but there are going to be hiccups along the way for Brady, but I definitely don't think he's done. I think he's going to play well this year.
Well, it's only week two, so, I mean, there's some extreme hyperbole here to suggest mm-hmm. that any teams need a win. But there are a few teams that I think had high hopes this year that didn't have the greatest week one. They would certainly be looking for bounce backs. And I look at Minnesota and Indianapolis, and they play each other this weekend. I look at the Niners going across the country at New York, maybe Philly. of those teams, you know, and you feel free to include anyone else, maybe Houston, is there a team you're circling and you're thinking they got to really – they have to look a lot better at the very least to what they looked in week one?
The number one team far and away without any question to me was Cleveland. And they did what they had to do last night. They weren't quite as good on defense as I thought they could be or should be, but I thought Cleveland really, really needed that. I think the number two team on your list is San Francisco. You know, this is a team that has been absolutely gobsmacked by injuries in their receiving core. And it looks like if he plays this week, that George Kittle is not going to be anywhere near 100%. He's an essential part of that offense. The most dangerous receiver they have, Deebo Samuel, is gone for the first 3 weeks at least. After breaking his foot in June, that is a huge, huge injury for Kyle Shanahan when he's play calling a game. And then Brandon Ayuk, who may play, it looks like he will play at the Jets, is certainly not 100%, but he was their first-round pick this year, or one of their two first-round picks. They really need him to hit the ground running. And that's always a dangerous thing for a rookie. But this all flows into the Jimmy Garoppolo tributary. And, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo has got to play better than he played last week against Arizona. When your team is totally beat up and needs to have the quarterback make big plays to help out a wounded tight end and wide receiver position group, Jimmy Garoppolo's got to step up and make things happen. So that would be one other team. And I think the third team would be the Philadelphia Eagles. You know, their offensive line was an absolute disaster last week, as bad as any single position group was in the NFL last week. Allowed 8 sacks. They couldn't get anything going. Carson Wentz is, you know, just looking like, you know, what in the world is going on here? And now what do the Philadelphia Eagles have coming in? Aaron Donald, the most dangerous football player playing today. So, you know, the Eagles, I mean, I don't know how they're going to handle that game. That is a really tough game. The Rams played better than I think anybody thought last week in beating Dallas in the opener. So, I don't know. Those are three teams that I think have a lot to play for this weekend.
Peter, you had Cleveland at one, but wasn't that kind of a given that they were going to bounce back against Cincy? I mean, isn't it more important?
I didn't think so because – I thought that Joe Burrow was going to play. I think Joe Burrow right now is really good, and not really good for a rookie. I think he's really good. I think Joe Burrow is going to win some games. The Bengals are going to win some games this year. And you say, how'd the Bengals win that game? And it's all going to be due to Burrow. So, I mean, the Browns lost by 32 points last week. There's no game that Cleveland is going to play all season that I say it's a given at all. Maybe when they play, well, look, they don't play the Jets, I think, until December, but the Jets stink worse than the Browns do or did in week one. So maybe I would view that differently, but I'm higher than the Bengals, I think, than you are.
Yeah, and I think you've been saying that about the Browns like everyone else for about 20 years now. So just roll the tape, and no one has too much faith in them. And, you know, speaking of the devil, you mentioned Kittle just a moment ago. Schefter tweeting out the Niners have ruled him out. So Kittle will not be there on Sunday.
Jets. The thing about his importance to that offense is that Jimmy Garoppolo needs an intermediate – safety blanket, and to Jimmy Garoppolo, George Kittle is what Rob Gronkowski was for Tom Brady for all those years. And without him, and without one of the best deep threats in football in Deebo Samuel,
I'm just telling you, Jimmy Garoppolo is going to wake up Sunday morning in New Jersey and say, all right, guys, ride me today. I'm going to lead us today. We're going to be fine. And if he doesn't do that, look, they're lucky to be playing the Jets this weekend, in my opinion. That's a game. There's not a team in the league right now that I think is an easier win right now than the Jets. So that's fortunate that at their lowest ebb right now, the 49ers get to have the Jets.
With Peter King, we'll get you out of here on the Sunday nighter, where Bill Belichick had incredible praise for Russell Wilson. I mean, it's not like Russ.
Better player.
Yeah, and it's not like Russ doesn't get a ton of love, but, you know, at the same time, maybe he does get overlooked to an extent just because of where he's come in on the rankings. We've been talking about this for a long time, that, you know, Brady and Peyton Manning had already been established when he showed up. Rodgers was ahead of him. Now you got Mahomes and Jackson who are behind him but are getting a ton of love. And Wilson just keeps chugging along and putting up remarkable numbers. And when you get maybe the greatest coach of all time saying you might be the best player in football, that goes a long way. But I'm always a little bit skeptical with Belichick. Like, is there a gamesmanship here? Is he trying to spark something from Cam? How should we read into those comments before they play on Sunday?
I don't think you should overplay him. I mean, Belichick was just – he only plays Russell Wilson once every 4 years, except if they meet in the Super Bowl, obviously. But so, you know, who knows? How many more times is he going to face Russell Wilson? Maybe none. But, I mean, I doubt that. I think he's going to coach for a while longer. But I think he was just simply stating a fact by what he has seen. And I think the Russell Wilson story is so incredibly interesting. I mean, look, he was drafted in the third round in 2012. This is ninth year in the NFL. And he never, ever, ever has not started a game for the Seahawks since he walked into training camp in the summer of 2012. I mean, the guy was drafted after a punter. And you know, he has had one of the most amazing careers of any current player in the game, because whatever he is, I think he's second or third now in NFL history in passer rating for his career. And he does everything well. He leads well. He takes a hit and he keeps on ticking. I'll never forget the first time I met him. I met him in that training camp in 2012 up in Seattle. And what was really, really interesting is that, you know, right away, you could tell what a football nerd he was. He says, "Hey, Mr. King, how you doing? Yeah, I read your stuff. I'm really interested." And he said, "Tell me a couple things about Drew Brees." And he asked me some questions about Brees. And so he's just he's a football sponge, and I really over the years have appreciated his greatness so much. The one other thing I would say, people, and I've written this, I wrote it this spring just to kind of try to put it in some perspective. In the eight full seasons that he's had, he started every game that the Seahawks have had, obviously, in those 8 years, and now in his ninth year. But in those 8 years, there have been 400 MVP votes cast in the NFL, and he's never gotten a single one of them. And understand this. In baseball, the baseball writers get to vote for a number of players. It's either 5 or 10. They have a ballot, and they vote 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or however many there are. And the points are handed to players on a sliding scale. And so, you know, obviously, if that system were in football, Russell Wilson would have got a boatload of votes by now. But the fact is, it's impossible last year, at least in my opinion, even though Russell Wilson had a great year, it's impossible if you have a vote, which I do, for the MVP, it's impossible to not vote for Lamar Jackson. He sets the NFL record for rushing yards in a season by a quarterback. His team wins more games than any team in the NFL, and he leads the NFL in touchdown passes. Well, how could you not vote for him? It's impossible. And he was since Russell Wilson has been in the NFL, this was the second time that there was a unanimous vote for the MVP. So nobody else got any votes last year other than Lamar Jackson, and deservedly so. I have argued with the Associated Press, which is the keeper of the MVP. I've argued with them almost every year. You've got to change this because it's ridiculous that these are great, great players, and it's like they don't exist. Only one guy gets recognition for the MVP. So I don't know. I don't see it changing, but I don't agree with the system in place.
Peter King's Football Morning in America, the must-read football article every Monday, and we look forward to it. And it's always great of you to take time for us. We'll do it again next week. Thank you for this, Peter.
Sounds great, guys. Have a great weekend.
Yep, Peter King, NFL insider from NBC. Yeah, Russell Wilson, man. He's well, good. And
yeah,
Belichick.
I always think there's an angle with Belichick.
That's what I'm saying. Like, what's he up to over there?
Because it is like, you know, Cam Newton, I feel like it's almost like a challenge to him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, flat out. Like, I'm
that's the only thing it would be. He wouldn't be slighting or...
No, no, it's not a disrespect thing.
That's
it's
for Cam
like...
Newton, for Belichick to say, I don't think there's a better player than this guy. It's for
that's
for
how
Cam
I
Newton
see it
to
too.
Read that.
Totally. Yeah. That's
it's
exactly
not it's not anything to slight Russell Wilson or to say that he's overrated. No. It's just he wants to see what his quarterback does.
Yeah, it's I think there's always... With guys like that, I think they're always going through little tests with their players. He's got a new quarterback. He wants to see, you know, if this guy is going to step up and against the best in the league. And I would love for him to be for Cam Newton to have a fantastic night and go to Belichick and be like, actually, I'm your guy. I'm the best.
Well, it would go a long way for him. Yeah. I mean, I don't think anyone's ever slighting Russell Wilson. You can't do that. I mean, it's not possible. He's already going to the Hall of Fame right now. He could retire tonight. He's going. And he's going to go down in history as an all-time great player. And he'll get better over time because you look at his stats and say, wow, look at this guy. Look at how much he won. And the division he's played in has historically been very difficult. But I think trying to get Cam going, who has won an MVP, which Russell Wilson has not, you know, maybe that's one way to try to just keep him motivated going into week two. That's a tough game at Seattle. Really tough Sunday night. Race coming up in 20 minutes. Speaking of the MVP, it has been awarded in the NBA. We'll tell you about that next. All right, race coming up in about 15. We'll review the tape. We'll go to the jury on the Braden Point game last night.
I thought it was cut and dry. I got to be honest. But right. But you know what? I want to listen to it.
Play
and
it.
We're
going to play it at 5. We'll get to it in a minute.
Yeah, I'm not biased either way. I thought I heard that, but I can be corrected.
And you have a good memory, Jamie. You have a good memory.
Well, I do, but I assumed, and we know what happens when you assume things, right?
Well, as a jury member, you're never supposed to assume. There should not be assumptions, right?
Exactly. So I may have made a mistake here.
Okay,
I'll
we'll see. Hey, listen, if I'm wrong, fine. That's all good, but I don't remember ever locking anything in, which has to happen, but that's just me. Giannis winning MVP again today. And just
he posted something weird on Twitter. He posted like himself in a jet.
Yeah,
with
reading
the headline
the paper.
On a paper. I'm like,
yeah, reading the New York Times.
And the headline is Giannis wins a back-to-back MVP. I was like, man.
It's kind of got a Dwayne Casey vibe to it, doesn't it? Like Coach of the Year, but everything's up in the air. And
you stunk the jar. You got hurt and your team was a mess.
Yeah. I thought it was like I got a little LeBron from that. You know how LeBron, you know, posted that Instagram like you've worked so hard. He's in third person.
That was
like,
the weirdest post.
Yeah, that's like obviously the guy's on a private jet. He should. I mean, he can afford it. All of that, but it's tough. Like I just. There was something cryptic in there, too. I didn't understand it at all. Because why do you be like, hey, take this picture of me? Because that's obviously somebody's on the jet taking the picture of him.
Right.
And take this picture of me. I'm going to put it out there. But what are you putting out there? Like, it's all. Do you remember Tom Brady had that cryptic picture? Is he walking into Foxborough or is he walking out? We couldn't figure it out.
Right.
He was messing. To me, this is messing with social media. I don't know what he's doing.
There's like a Da Vinci Code kind of vibe to it. We need Robert Langdon on that plane, and we need to figure out what it actually means.
Yeah.
But, you know, listen, Giannis had a spectacular year. No one's going to complain. You could make a strong argument for LeBron, But it's not like Giannis, you know, duped anybody here. He had a great, great year. But it's another example of LeBron, kind of like what Peter King was saying about Russell Wilson, only LeBron is even more extreme in this case because he's even better than Russell Wilson is. He has not won an MVP in 7 years.
Yeah.
7 years. And he's LeBron James, and he's still the best player in the world. And if he's not, he's certainly in the top two or three. How you go 7 years without winning an MVP just simply means fatigue or voters are overthinking it. You know,
yeah,
like that's all it is.
That's
like,
you know,
you can't tell me LeBron didn't deserve one MVP over the past 7 years. You can pick whichever season you want. Last one notwithstanding. Last year, clearly, he didn't deserve it. Didn't play enough.
Close.
Lakers stunk.
Right.
But 6 of the past 7 years, he's still been the best player in the world.
I think people got sick of it. And like you said, they're just looking for something different.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and I guess it happens in every league. But we'll see what Ray has to say about the Cup Final. Maybe MVP fatigue, could that end up happening with McDavid in the future, you know, when it comes to a hockey slant? So we'll get to that and more coming up with Ray. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.